What up, what up, what up? Back again for another great episode. It is the FTN Fantasy Show with your boy LQ, Mr. Real Deal Fantasy HQ. You see the face, you know the case. And my boy Matt Okada joining me along on this ride, man. And look, we got a lot to get in today, but I love starting the show off asking you how you were doing and how's everything been since the last time we spoke.
Mostly solid. I feel like I've lost a few fantasy weekends the past couple that I wasn't losing earlier in the year, so we need to lock in down the stretch.
You're kind of soft-seated right now.
Yeah, one of those is in the Dynasty League that I've won back-to-back championships and was undefeated coming into a matchup with somebody else on this show who gave me my first loss of the season. So
let's go! How did you know, Okada? It's like, man, we've done only 23 episodes together and worked with each other for a couple years. But, man, you know exactly where I was going to go to turn that knife that had to get that victory this week, baby. Let's go. After that god-awful trade you sent me, by the way.
Yeah, true. The funniest part about this is me and I don't know if anybody listening knows Matthew Betts, but he's a he's the injury expert in Dynasty, one of the Dynasty podcast and DFS podcast hosts for the Fantasy Footballers. Very good friend of mine. We used to host podcasts together, actually. He's in this league also. It's a Pros and Joes league. He and I were both undefeated going into last week, and we are playing this week. So we were mounting up to this 9-0 versus 9-0 Titans duel for first
and
place.
And I shattered it, baby.
And he also lost last week. So now we've both lost. We're coming off losses. We're both 8-1. It should be very fun. But yes, my team was humbled by Laquans.
I love it when I do podcasts with folks that we are in the same leagues and we go head to head. I think we should have built up that matchup a little bit more, but I do like, you know, catching a W where I can, especially in some leagues, because just like you, I'm kind of limping right now going into week 10 because there's a lot of injuries going on. So I got to ask you, brother, what are the major need to knows for week 10? Because, man, it is getting dark out there for some rosters.
All right, let's hit them. As always, if you want to see all the things to know for FTN, you can check out the article, but I will give you my three for this show. Number one, Brian Thomas Jr. is just a straight bust. I'm done beating around the bush. I'm done pretending like he's going to come back. I'm done making excuses. My man is a massive bust. And if you ask me what happened between the end of last season and the start of this one, I don't know that I could fully tell you. Obviously, there's the Mac Jones to Trevor Lawrence reality, but it's hard to believe that coming back from Mac Jones to Trevor Lawrence after what Brian Thomas Jr. did at the end of last year is enough to make Brian Thomas Jr. as bad as he has been this year. It feels like a lot of it is his own doing. And it's hard to know. But here's the reality, Laquan. Through 9 weeks, 8 games, he is the wide receiver 45 in half PPR points per game. Not the wide receiver 30, not the wide receiver 20, which would still be a bust based on where he was drafted. The wide receiver 45. He has 2 games with double-digit fantasy points in half PPR, and one of those was exactly 10.0, so he barely cracked double digits. He scored 1 touchdown all year. He has a 50% catch rate, and he just can't stay healthy. These last few weeks, it's like I don't want to be overly narrative-y and overly judgmental of a player based on things that just seem like speculation, but it almost feels like he doesn't want to play that much. And so he just gets banged up a little bit and he ends up going to the sideline and missing the rest of the game. And so this has happened now for a few weeks. And is he going to be healthy this week? We don't know. I feel like if you go to most rankings on most sites, I think even probably our own, you will see Brian Thomas Jr. listed as like a top 30 guy. Why? At this point, Laquan, why? Like Travis Hunter out with injury. So maybe you think there's some hope and the team goes and gets Jacoby Myers and Parker Washington is breaking out. Like, I just don't understand it anymore. I posted a tweet, a poll it's not technically a tweet anymore, but a post on X, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I asked, rest of season, who would you rather start every week? Brian Thomas Jr., Alec Pierce, Troy Franklin, or Rashid Shaheed? And this was before Rashid Shaheed was traded. And Brian Thomas Jr. won the poll by quite a lot. All of those guys have scored more fantasy points per game this year, and I legitimately would rather have all of them on my lineup every week than Brian Thomas Jr. That's how bad it is.
Give me Alec Pierce. Give me Rashid Shaheed, because boy, oh boy, actually on the FTN Fantasy website, if you go there right now and sign up for a subscription, you could use our promo code FTN Fantasy Show to get 10% off. But man, we have him ranked to consensus at wide receiver 49. That boy is well off into the deep depths of Forgottensville, to where he's going to be collecting a lot of dust on a lot of benches for the next couple of weeks. But that trade deadline is around the corner. Hit me with number two, Okada. This one has to be a good one, man.
Number two is a good one if you're me. It's not a good one if you're most people playing fantasy or giving fantasy advice, because for some reason, everyone, just about everyone, was able to convince themselves and each other that Jacorey Crosky-Merritt was going to be a thing this year. And am I starting with two negative things to know? Yes,
yeah.
We'll bring it around in the end. Don't worry. We'll bring it around. But it's time. I am ready to take my victory lap. I don't do this too often, but I was one of the only people saying, guys, this is not going to happen. It never happens that seventh round rookies are suddenly RB1s. It just doesn't happen. And we saw one game from him after Austin Eckler went down where he scored 26 fantasy points, and everybody said, holy cannoli, it's happening. JCM is here. All the hype has been justified, and then every single game since, he has sucked. Four straight weeks with fewer than six fantasy points. Fewer than six for a month, Laquan.
And this is a starting running back, people.
Yes, that's despite having double-digit opportunities in all four games. So it's not like he's not getting the opportunities, or the split with Chris Rodriguez and Jeremy McNichols is like still too high, although it is still higher than I think most Crosky-Merritt managers would like. But with his many, many opportunities, he's just still not doing it. Barely averaging more than 3 yards per carry over that span. He has scored zero touchdowns over this last month. He has three catches for 9 yards over this last month. And Washington just lost Jaden Daniels. So that's not going to help the offense. Whatever you think of Marcus Mariota and his ability, and I'll say he's like one of the least bad backups in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm about to say Mariota was actually balling for a little bit.
He's not bad.
He looked the part.
But they're not going to, this offense is not going to be great, and it's going to get worse without Jaden Daniels. So similar to Brian Thomas Jr., I think a lot of people in the rankings still have him on the edge of RB2 range, like edge of RB2, RB3 range. I don't know why. He's the RB37 in points per game, even with that big week five with 26 points, which looks like a complete fluke. Without that week, he's absolutely nothing. He's like below an RB4. I think he's droppable at this point, and people need to stop putting him in their lineups.
Listen, that word droppable, it hurts some folks' feelings, because some folks do not know how to rip off the Band-Aid, and it's okay. We can let Bill go. It was great in the beginning of the season. It was fun. It was fun to say, Bill. But it was the Jonah Hill meme, the gif, he's like, we can't do that no more, because, boy, it come and pass. But now you said we were going to bring it around. Where's some positivity here for number three?
Yeah. All right. I'm going to sneak in the positivity, and then I'm going to get to my final thing. So the sneak in is the bonus number four. The Carolina running back by committee is gone. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Laquan, but I may have said last week, was it last week that I said on this show that the committee is a problem and it might be staying? Or did I just write that in the article?
I don't know if you said that on previous episodes, but it seems like you're not the only one who's kind of been out there putting that out there, saying this may be a 1-2 punch for the rest of the season.
Because initially Dave Canales had said, we're committed to having the committee. We like having the committee. We paid Chuba Hubbard. We're going to keep this committee going. But then this last week, he said, and the words that he says are more important to me than what Rico Dowdle did in the game. He said, we recognize what Dowdle is doing for us. We can't ignore it. And we're going to make sure to capitalize it. And then out he comes, has 25 carries. Chuba Hubbard has 5. With the words he said and what we've seen on the field, the decision is done. It is no longer a committee. Dowdle is the guy. He is going to be a stud rest of season. So that's your bonus number 4, positivity.
Nice.
But now we'll get back to number 3. This one is not negative necessarily or positive. It's just factual information that is good for our listeners to know.
Yes.
Jordan Love. Jordan Love is exactly what his matchup says that he is. Here's what I mean by that. Laquan, you are a fantasy analyst. You've been doing this for some time. You, and I think many of our listeners probably know about the Jared Goff home versus road split.
Yeah.
Right?
The house cat.
Yes, he is the house cat. This Marcus Grant shout out. He's great at home. He's terrible on the road. And we can trust that. There's enough data to know that that's just what he is. Jordan Love has become something similar, but it is with matchup splits. So he has played 4 soft opponents for quarterbacks, fantasy quarterbacks, Washington, Dallas, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. They are all very nice matchups. In those 4 matchups, he has averaged 22.9 fantasy points per game, and he scored 20 plus in 3 of 4 and just about 16 in the 4th against Cincinnati. That was his minimum, his low point in those 4 matchups. He has also played 4 matchups, not against super soft teams. In those games, he has averaged 12.9 fantasy points per game with a high of 15.9. So the high is even below the low of those 4 softer matchups. He just scored 10 against the Panthers in a new season low, and that's a middling matchup. It's not like they're the Denver Broncos.
Yeah,
or
that's
some
weird,
super
right?
hard matchup. Yeah. The one game he's played against a really truly difficult red quote unquote matchup was the Browns when he scored 12.12 fantasy points. So the good news about this is it means you can stream him confidently when the matchup is soft. So this is one of those rare instances where you check your app. If it's green, you feel good. The Giants, he plays in week 11. Great. The Bears twice in weeks 14 and 16. Great. Maybe the Ravens in week 17 in the fantasy championship. TBD, because their defense might be a little fixed. Great. But in the other 4 games he has left on his schedule, which are the Eagles this week, week 15 against Denver, absolutely not. And then there's a couple others that are like middling matchups. I don't feel great about it, and you should try to have somebody else that you can stream alongside him. He makes a great pair in a duo or a great half of a duo, but you do not want to play him in a tough matchup. And this then trickles down to his pass catchers, because when he's going to be great in those soft matchups, he's probably gonna have a couple guys that are good. Those are the weeks you can stream Romeo Doubs, maybe Matthew Golden, maybe Christian Watson if you're really desperate. But in the other ones, I don't trust starting anyone.
You know, it's crazy, man. I think Jordan Love, man, he's been very inconsistent, and me having him in a super flex league, it kind of went under the radar, because when you have your Drake May, when you have like your Mahomes's and Stafford's and et cetera, they're kind of doing their thing and you're kind of excited for their progress. But I did take a notice of Jordan Love. When I'm looking at Jordan Love, I'm like, yo, man, what's going on with these freaking fantasy points? And then you start seeing turnovers from this guy. I was like, oh, his turnover machine buddy is back in town, Christian Watson. Now, if you look at the last 3 seasons, Okada, 32% of Jordan Love's interceptions have come from targeting Christian Watson. Leads the team. It's insane. And I'm like, wait, hold up. This can't be real. Come on. No way. He's his guy. But he's his guy for turnovers as well. So I do think there's going to be a lot more turnovers. There's a lot more deep shots they're going to try to activate between Watson and Golden. So I think Jordan Love in some type of tough matchups, I'm definitely pivoting the other way. So it's real nasty work to try to track this guy. Man, let's take a quick break, but we're going to come back with some tough starts, some tough sits, some guys that are right there on the cusp, for some guys that are out there in the fantasy streets, keeping people up at night, trying to figure out, do I start this guy? Do I sit this guy? So we'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we are back. Some tough starts, some tough sits, and man, a few of these guys, I got to be honest, Okada. Now, when I'm prepping the doc, you know, a little peek behind the curtain. I got to be honest. Some of these guys are on my roster, so you're going to be helping me out personally. You know, so I got to be honest because I'm like, oh, man, I got some questions for myself. And first up, I want to start with a guy that I drafted highly. I've drafted him in the first round in my cutthroat season league. This is a league that I've been with my high school friends for over 10 years now. Man, this is a league that I get barked at a lot, Okada. So the mistakes that I make, you can only imagine because, yeah, I'm the friend that works at the NFL and loves fantasy football, but if I'm getting my butt kicked by one of my homies, they're going to let me know in the group chat. So Nico Collins against the Jaguars, man, he has not been a guy I purchased. Like, he's not been the guy of expectations. Like, do I even flirt with the idea of putting Nico Collins on the bench?
No, you don't. I do not think that you do. And I'll tell you why. And this is a good one to bring up, Laquan, because this is one of the players in the league, and there are many of them, where when you don't watch all the games and you don't remember everything that's happened because you're not, like, dialed all the way in knowing everything that's happening every week, and you just look at box scores and you say, this guy's been disappointing me all year, it can be very easy to forget how things happened, why someone's not playing that well, and therefore not fully understanding the context. But here's the deal with Nico Collins. Last week, 11 fantasy points. He caught 7 passes for 75 yards on 11 targets. All of that sounds great. And all of that came against the toughest matchup in the entire league, in the Broncos. Now, there was no Pat Surtain, but they're still in an unbelievable defense with very, very good corners.
Yeah. Riley Moss was pretty good, too.
Yep. And he was great. He didn't score a touchdown, and so he only ended up with 11 fantasy points, but he was great. The week before that, he missed with a concussion. The week before that, his box score looks terrible, but that's the week he suffered the concussion, and he had 10 targets in that game. The week before that was the bye. The week before that, he had 4 catches for 52 yards and a touchdown, scored 14 points. The week before that, he's caught 4 balls for 79 yards, which is also great. Those 2 weeks, he only had 5 and 6 targets. And so you're like, wait, what happened to my true wide receiver one? He was good with his limited targets, but that doesn't look too good. Well, look at those games. The Texans beat the Titans 26-0, and the Texans beat the Ravens 44-10 in those 2 games.
Smackdown.
Do we expect the Texans to be winning by 30 points most of the games for the rest of the season, Laquan? Because I sure don't. Those are some weird, fluky games against backup quarterbacks or guys who are playing worse than backup quarterbacks, and so they didn't need him to do well. And then in the 2 games before that, 12.7 and 18.4 fantasy points, a touchdown in each. He had 11 targets and 9 targets. So overall, it looks very bad. And it might sound like I'm making a lot of excuses for him. But I think that these are good reasons to believe that when healthy and in reasonable game scripts, which we should expect from the Texans, Nico Collins will be good. And I don't particularly much care that it's Davis Mills over CJ Stroud, because it's not like Stroud had been playing unbelievable quarterback this season. That might sound crazy. Davis Mills is a capable backup and got Nico Collins the ball 7 times for 75 yards on 11 targets. Not quite, because it was a mid-game switch, but a bunch of that came from Mills.
Yeah,
you're rolling him out there, and I think that he's a buy target in trades before the deadline and will be very, very good rest of the season.
It's the Davis Mills thing to me, man. That's why I'm flirting with the idea of sitting him. But guess what? You know, I don't need to flirt because the pivot option will be Wandell Robinson. Does that look great in my lineup with Nico Collins on my bench? Abso-freaking-lutely not. So I am locking in Nico Collins. I'm riding this, but it's the Davis Mills portion of it that scares me against the Jags defense that knows how to take the ball away. And I don't need Davis Mills coming in cold. I mean, he ain't coming in that cold, being that he got in the middle of the game, but still, we've seen enough of Davis Mills to know that Davis Mills is even nowhere near the bad game that CJ Stroud has been having this season. So that's why I'm a little hesitant. I got to ask you about another guy. Now, Aaron Glenn has been trolling for some time now of not naming his starting quarterback. I mean, look, let's play hypotheticals. The time that we're recording this podcast, well, there is no update on it. But if Justin Fields is named the starter, he's good to go. Are you rolling him out against the Browns defense this week?
Not if I can help it. And that's tough because I was a big Justin Fields fan, and for fantasy, he is good more often than he is bad. However, he also has a bit of the good defense versus bad defense splits that Jordan Love does, if you look at his game logs. And I think that this one makes a lot of sense because he is an easy quarterback to take advantage of from a defense perspective and from a pass defense perspective. He's the kind of guy who, if you're facing a soft defense that doesn't know how to deal with him, he can kind of run around, make crazy things happen, and end up with a lot of fantasy points. But if it's a well-disciplined defense who can corral him, get takeaways, which he's want to do, it's going to be bad. And so with the Browns being a very good defense, this feels like a game where he might end up with single-digit fantasy points again. I would prefer to avoid this and see him back in this offense with some confidence before I'm rolling him out for fantasy.
No, that's real. That's real, because I know a lot of folks are itching for that top five season for Justin Fields, and it's just unfortunate that it just keeps falling flat because of just other entities and injuries and et cetera, but I feel as though, like, if I can pivot, I will. I mean, at the end of the day, I've made it so many X amount of weeks for, you know, certain quarterbacks dealing with injuries like JD5. Like, personally, I found pivot options at this point. Like, Matthew Stafford was on the waiver wire up until week 8, folks. Like, it's insane. I don't know how, why, but he was. But moving on. Now, looking at Rashad White, Bucky Irvin's still not practicing this week. A lot of folks are really worried about Bucky Irvin, but we'll save him for later in the show, that we have our thoughts and opinions on that. But Rashad White versus your New England Patriots, how are you feeling about this guy as at least a flex appeal this week?
That's a good way to ask the question, because as at least a flex appeal play in PPR, I can allow it. The reason for that is the Patriots actually give up a decent amount of receiving production to running backs. Part of that comes from the fact that they are winning a lot. How? I don't know. Drake May is how.
Bro, but you're the fan. Shocking. Come on.
As the Patriots fan, this is wild behavior that we're
saying. Wait, what is happening right now?
I think he might get 3 or 4 catches, maybe get 30 yards receiving, something like that. That's not going to be enough, except in full PPR, to make him great, because this run defense, Laquan, is terrifying. They have given up 3.1 yards per carry to running backs on the season. That is best in the entire league. They've allowed just 3 total touchdowns to running backs. The only teams that have allowed fewer fantasy points overall are the Rams, Browns, and Lions. So he is not going to get anything going on the ground game. It's not like he's been good in that aspect anyways.
No.
He's been very inefficient. So I think he might have more production receiving than he does rushing, but that's not going to be enough to make him a great play. In PPR, I think it can make him an okay floor-based flex. But if you're looking for any upside or looking for an RB2, I would be looking elsewhere this week. Folks, and I will say, if Bucky Irving does play, which, as you pointed out, we don't know yet, that's going to make me nervous for both, because Rashad White will lose a lot of his volume and Bucky Irving will be fresh off an injury against an extremely strong run defense. I would not feel great starting him either.
No, that's real. And folks, like, listen, flex appeal, it's more so of like, hey, if you are one of the more wounded teams out there, then obviously you're locking him in. But if you have higher ceilings, because my expectations where it aligns with Okada, like, I'm thinking 12 fantasy points at max of what we can see from him. And I know this is one of those weeks where it's like kind of weird with some of those teams on bye, you know, the trade deadline. It's a lot going on right now, but make sure you are putting in the best options. Now, Okada, this is a personal one. This is me here. This is me asking you, brother. Aaron Jones, okay? Obviously, the big Jordan Mason fan here. Love Jordan Mason, but he has not been great with his opportunities when Aaron Jones has been out of the office. But Aaron Jones is back. Showed some fantasy production. Do we lock in Aaron Jones as a flex this week against the Ravens?
This is a really tough one. First of all, he needs to be healthy. He got his shoulder banged up. I think he should play, but we're going to have to keep an eye on that. The other thing, there are a couple other things to note with this. One, his first game back, he was horrifically inefficient, Laquan.
Yeah,
5 for 15 on the ground.
Wild.
So
embarrassing.
So, yeah, coming off of that first game back, we were like, oh my sweet heavens, Aaron Jones is cooked, and Jordan Mason is also cooked, and this is going to be a hideous back for the whole year. Then in week 9... he was weirdly, and in my opinion, unsustainably efficient. He took 9 carries for 78 yards. He also had 20 receiving yards on just 2 targets, caught both of them. I don't think either of those is fully real, but I believe in the second one less. I don't think Aaron Jones at this point in his career is an 8 yards per carry guy. I don't think he's going to be doing this. And what we do know with some confidence is he's not going to be getting 15 to 20 touches a game. He's going to be splitting work very heavily with Jordan Mason. So if he doesn't have efficiency like this, it's not going to be good for fantasy. And I think a lot of people are going to look at this matchup with the Ravens, who are very green in your app because of what they did early in the season, and say, ooh, I can play Aaron Jones because they're bad against running backs. Don't be so sure. They have started to figure out their defense, as they seem to do every year. They did this last year as well. They started bringing Kyle Hamilton down into the box to help with the run game because they went out and traded and got Alohi Gilman to play on the back end. And so they know what they're doing to fix their problems. They are good at this, and they do it well. And since the bye, even a little bit before the bye when they made this trade, they're figuring it out, and their defense is not what it was earlier in the year. So I don't think this matchup is as good as it looks. I don't think Aaron Jones is as good as he looked last week. I would prefer to sit him. I think he's a similar flex-ish kind of guy as Rashad White is, where if you need to, you can play him. But I'm not excited about it this week.
Oh, man, yeah, that's very sad to hear, because now I have to remove him from the flex spot. And now I have to find a pivot option. I mean, Ray Davis might be out there in the waiver wire. James Cook, you know, is banged up as well. So I might have to, like, flirt with Ray Davis right now. Pause on that. But more so looking at the matchup. I mean, the Ravens, like you said, man, they've been able to adjust. And I look at matchups that they had with Kyren Williams, 16 fantasy points. Devon Achane, 16 fantasy points. DeAndre Swift, 15 fantasy points. And Aaron Jones ain't sniffing any of that, okay? Because these are guys that have been playing at a high level for multiple weeks and being not humbled out of their RB1 positions in terms of fantasy production, but having them capped in terms of their opportunities for scoring, in terms of opportunities for running routes and catching passes. So I will say this, Aaron Jones will not be a starter this week, folks. I am going to go run to the waiver wire and see if Ray Davis is still there, because none of my friends are going to be listening to this pod right now anyway. So I still have time because I have control when I release this anyway. So I'm moving on to Mr. Chris Olave. Now, Okada, share with you what I like to call the satchel of discontent. Players who've just been disappointing. Kyle Pitts was once in there. Chris Olave was once in there. Trevor Mid-Lawrence is still in there making room and making reservations. Now, I would say this. Chris Olave poked his head out of the satchel of discontent, of disappointment earlier in the season with Spencer Rattler. How do you feel about with Tyler Shuck now as the starting quarterback moving on rest of the season, not being traded at the NFL deadline? He is the guy in New Orleans. How do you feel about his fantasy production this week against the Panthers?
Laquan, you have come up with the rundown here and put in some players, a very interesting, difficult decision players to discuss. I don't think that you checked or found my fades and busts article for Yahoo that just published this morning before doing so, unless I'm mistaken. But no. 3 of the names you have on your list are in my article this week. Rashad White is one of them. Chris Olave is a second one. I am very concerned about Chris Olave this week. And here's the deal with him. It's been a very mixed bag for him. And so it's hard to know because there's so many moving parts for them right now, and for Olave in particular. Week 6 through 8, he was very good. He was very strong. But then he nosedived to 3 catches for 57 yards on a season-low 4 targets in Tyler Shuck's first start this past weekend. So to your point, can we trust him with Shuck? Well, the one bit of data we have says no. But then Rashid Shaheed got traded away, and he was the guy who led the team in targets in that Shuck game. So now you're like, well, those targets have to move back from Rashid Shaheed to somebody. Right. And Olave's the only other guy who's been getting them. But if the flow of targets is also going to Olave, there's another thing that's going to flow towards Olave, and that's the defensive attention with nobody else there to catch passes. So you've got a Panthers defense that's actually been pretty good against wide receivers. They only have to cover Chris Olave in this offense. In fact, you don't even have to stop the run game because you're not scared of Alvin Kamara at this point in his career.
Cooked.
So you're literally, Olave is the only weapon at this point for New Orleans with Shaheed gone. And he has not been efficient. 1.8 yards per route run, not great. He scored 3 touchdowns on 87 targets this year, not great. And I think he's going to be double teamed and fully locked down by every defense he faces for the rest of the year. He's going to get targets probably, maybe like 8 to 10 even. But is that going to be enough with the way he's been playing, the way Tyler Shuck, we expect Tyler Shuck to play, and this defense? I don't really think so. I think he might get 10 targets and still score just 5 fantasy points, and you're going to feel really rough about it.
Yikes, yikes, yikes. I'm not a fan of Tyler Shuck actually becoming the starter. I wanted Spencer Rattler, the Rattlesnake 316, to finish the season out as a starter because your boy got a lot of Juwan Johnson, man. And I told folks in the preseason, I mean, Juwan Johnson is going to be a factor on this offense. Now I'm in worry about Juwan Johnson and the sudden breakout of Chris Olave. Real nasty work down there in New Orleans, but hey, who knows? Mac Jones may be the starter down there, or Kyler Murray, or Tua in 2026. So those are just bold predictions. Yeah, but moving on to a young player that recently blossomed into, I would say, the tight end one for the Chicago Bears. Not tight end one for fantasy just yet, but last week kind of exploded. Are we rolling with the Colston Loveland hype train going into week 10 versus the Giants?
This is the third guy in my article, Laquan. And this one is, I will say up front, I could be shooting myself in the foot here. And I'll be honest about that. Because Colston Loveland, I expect him to be a very good player in the NFL. So it's not impossible that what we saw last week was him stepping up into the tight end one role, and now he's just going to be good because I believe he has the talent to be good if he gets the target share. However, we need to understand the context, Laquan. Before last week's game, coming into week 9, he was the tight end 49 in points per game. Okay? Oof. It's not like he was starting to build up into a breakout. Ooh, he was seeing some more targets. Ooh, maybe Colston Love was working his way up. No. He was diddly bupkis all year. Kolkmet got hurt. It gave him a chance to get a few more routes. And then the Bears played the Cincinnati Bengals. Laquan.
There it is.
Laquan. The Cincinnati Bengals allow more points to fantasy tight ends than a defense made of you, me, and both our grandmas. This team is abysmal against the tight end position. So, yes, they gave up 26.8 fantasy points to Colston Loveland. Now, it's worth noting, he scored literally half of those on one play with 17 seconds left at the end of the game. Completely broken, big, big touchdown. So, before that, he was about 13 fantasy points. But this team, this Bengals defense, they also gave up 25.6 points to Pat Freiermuth. They gave up double-digit points to Jonnu Smith in that same game, Mason Taylor, Harold Fannin Jr. in his NFL debut all the way back in week 1. Yikes. They have been bodied by tight ends all year, and not all of them notable. So I am taking Colston Loveland's breakout with the largest grain of salt I have ever eaten my entire life. I will not believe in him as a true fantasy star until I see this against another defense. Could that happen this week? Yes, it legitimately could. I'm not saying it can't, but everybody is so quick to put Colston Loveland in the top 10 tight ends this week. And that feels like a major overreaction to one big game that was largely one big play against the worst defense against tight ends in recent memory. So to me, if you have another option who's reasonably startable, I would prefer to go with that one. Leave Loveland on your bench for another game or two. Watch the routes, the targets, etc., and see what happens. And remember, this Bears offense is throwing the ball all over the place willy-nilly. Like, they're distributing all their targets to all these different guys. In a normal game that's not against the Bengals defense, I don't know how much Colston Loveland's going to get.
Well, here at FTN Fantasy, if you check out our rankings on the website, we don't have him top 10.
Ooh,
but he is at 11, though. He's close to it. But listen, I understand folks starting to turn up because, man, we lost Tucker Kraft. And if you see that interview with Romeo Doubs, he felt like the fantasy community. Tucker Kraft is in a better place. But looking at the tight end market right now, looking at what's available in the wire, it is scraps, folks. Like, I think we spoke about this very early in the season. Like, there's going to be waves of newer tight ends coming, but then there's going to be coming a period where it just dead halt stops. There's going to be nobody available. If you were putting Colston Loveland as your starting tight end and your remaining season is looking like he's going to be your only option, thoughts and prayers, because I'm on Kata's side when it comes to this. I need to see it again. I need to see it against a defense that's not the Cowboys or the Bengals, because a lot of people, their rankings shoot up after they play the Cowboys or if they play the Bengals, and then we get fooled each and every single week. So I am pumping the brakes on hesitation for Colston Loveland. Okada, that was a great hit right there, man. Now we're going to take a break, though, and ask the fantasy streets of what's going on with their rosters. A lot of trade questions this week, Okada, because that trade deadline is on the way. Back again, and this is one of my favorite segments. It's a segment that I get to connect to the fantasy streets. Put my ear, literal ear, to the ground to hear what's going on with your trade questions, your starting sit questions all season long. So please make sure you guys are following the FTN Fantasy page and make sure you guys are going to the TikTok and be around when your boy's going live answering some of these questions, and I'm answering everything in the DM throughout the week. But the first question that we got, Okada, from Vic N from TikTok. Would you trade Chase Brown for Saquon Barkley? I have Kyren, Warren, and Vidal. Thoughts?
My first major thought is how confident is Vic that the other team's going to take this trade? Because I don't see a strong likelihood that someone's going to give up Saquon for Chase Brown straight up. However, I would probably do this. Now, I will say, I have been the Saquon hater all year. You know this, since the offseason. Yeah. But there's a certain point where I'd rather have Saquon than most RB2s. I would probably rather have Saquon than Chase Brown. I will say, Chase Brown has been quite good for three straight games with Joe Flacco running this offense. And he has a bye this week, and then a really tough matchup in week 11, and then a really tough matchup in week 12. But then after that, depending on how good the Ravens are, he has a series of pretty soft matchups, including the Dolphins in week 16, which is one of the better matchups for running backs. So he has a nice little stretch of opportunities to be great. Still, I'm probably going ahead and taking Saquon. They're not far apart for me in my rest of season rankings. Like, they're both in that high-end RB2, low-end RB1 range. But I think I'd probably lean Saquon if you're able to make this move straight up.
You know what, Okada? I'm on the other side of this. I'm actually making this trade. If I'm the Saquon manager, and I say that because it's like, if I'm willing to trade Saquon right now, that means my RB1 and 2 are good. And Saquon, in terms of body of work, he's kind of been disappointing at times. And I feel if you're able to make this move to get somebody who has a schedule that's softening up during the playoffs, this may be a team that's contending. Yeah. This may be a team that's not worried about the running back position. They may be stacked. Like, we could be looking at this team that I don't have eyes on the other team that he's making this trade with. We could be looking at his RB1 as Bijan, and then his RB2, it's like one of these new hot commodities right now that are riding off to sunset. What if it's Rico Dowdle? So I do feel like, you know, I feel good shipping off Saquon, acquiring Chase Brown. But on the other side of this, for Vic N, I feel a little hesitant about it, because Saquon is banged up right now. That's why I would be very hesitant of acquiring these injured players. Like, we could transition into one of the questions. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. So I want to ask you this, right? So when I seen this in the DM, I kind of was like, I'm going to wait and hold off. You know, and actually, this was on the Twitter timeline, actually, when I saw this. I was like, let me hold off and wait for Okada's opinion on this. I was offered for JSN, Quinshon Judkins, Kelsey, for my Rashid Rice, Bucky Irving, and Tyler Warren. Bucky still not practicing is still very concerning. What are your thoughts, Okada, acquiring this type of trade?
Okay, so getting JSN, Judkins, and Kelsey for Rashee Rice, Bucky, and Tyler Warren. Honestly, this feels very linear. This just feels like you're trading a top three wide receiver for a top three wide receiver. You're trading a top 15 running back for a top 15 running back, basically. And you're trading like a tight end 5-6 for a tight end 5-6. Now, I will say, I probably prefer Tyler Warren to Kelsey a little bit rest of season. I probably prefer Bucky Irving to Quinshon Judkins a little bit rest of season, but there is the health concern there. That said, I think he should be back in a week or two at most. Mm-hmm. And then JSN and Rashee Rice are pretty much a toss-up for me, which might sound crazy to some people based on how good JSN has been. But Rashee Rice has been the wide receiver one in fantasy since he came back. Straight up, the wide receiver one. So this feels largely very linear. It kind of feels like a preference call to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you feel strongly?
I would agree. I don't feel strongly either way. I mean, Joshua Delisano over on Twitter, man, I hope you're listening. I hope you are subscribing to the FTN Fantasy Show, because here we want to help the fantasy streets. But man, I didn't feel too strongly. I just kind of took a step back. I was like, I don't know if like there's a winner or a loser here. You know what I mean? Because I'm looking at a side that's acquiring JSN. That's what popped off my eyes. But then I looked at the other side where it's like, I'm getting Bucky off of my roster as well. So I look at that. There's a trade-off of like, I feel good about this. I feel fuzzy about that. This one doesn't make me feel anything, you know? Like, with Bucky Irvin still not practicing after coming out of the bye, it's a little concerning. Because we got to remember, though, he's a tiny running back. He can't take this workload. He can't be taking these bumps and bruises. We saw last season when he got injured, when he first got the workload, and it took two games for him to recover back to RB1 production. Now he starts this season off as the RB1, as the workhorse, and here we are. He's battling multiple injuries. I'm worried about his actual workload of finishing this season. So if I can get him off Okada, that's kind of where I feel a little bit like, okay, am I wrong? Am I off?
I mean, I don't think so. It's not terrible. I mean, it's a fair point. Judkins is also got banged up before the bye. So
yeah,
there's the reality that both of them are like this. Again, this is a very just similar situation across both sides. Yeah. One thing worth noting, I didn't include it in our original top three, Laquan, but one of the other 10 things to know this week in the FTN article, Rashee Rice is a bona fide wide receiver one and might be the wide receiver one. That is one of the other 10 things to know in the article.
That's bold there, my brother.
He has been the wide receiver one in his three games back, 26 targets, 20 catches, 233 yards, four touchdowns in three games. He is the best red zone weapon in the NFL right now, maybe barring Devontae Adams. And I'd rather have Rashee Rice than Devontae Adams by a gazillion miles.
Yeah.
Because he's better throughout the rest of the field. Because Devontae Adams, for some reason, only shows up when the Rams get to the red zone.
Fine.
So, I think I lean the second group. And I think maybe the deal breaker for me, or the final tilter, is, first of all, Bucky Irving might be more involved in the passing game because of how many injuries they've had. Once he gets back, we haven't seen him without all the wide receivers because he was hurt first, but he might get more receiving work. But then the one thing that really tilts it for me, I think, is Tyler Warren is a rookie. Rookies, especially tight ends, tend to get better over the second half of seasons and get stronger towards the end. I think there's a chance that Tyler Warren takes another level up, and it's not impossible that Kelsey takes a little step back. Given his age and the fact that they often end up like preserving him for playoff runs and things like that, although they have to make the playoffs to make a playoff run, but you know what I mean. So yeah, I think definitely. I lean the second half, but it's very balanced in my opinion.
Nah, hopefully, Joshua, we helped you out today, man. And look, I appreciate you shooting the questions on the timeline, but let's get to another one. This one was funny when I got in the TikTok DM. It was like, yo, gang. And I'm like, I'm not unk status yet, but this just feels like, bro, how old are you? Like, yo, gang. And I'm like, yo. So, yo, gang goes, would you trade Devon Achane, AJ Brown, and T Mac for Jonathan Taylor? What?
I mean, I'm trying to imagine a context where this would make sense. Maybe if you're in an 8-team league and T-Mac is like you're never sniffing your lineup and AJ Brown is like your wide receiver 3 or 4 and a lot of weeks he doesn't sniff your lineup, then maybe I'm considering it because Jonathan Taylor like almost doubles Devon Achane's weekly output, even though Devon Achane is great. But like Jonathan Taylor's on another level this year. So in that, in very select contexts where you're rarely starting AJ Brown and you're never starting Tet McMillan, I could see you maybe thinking about doing this. But in most situations where AJ Brown is a weekly wide receiver 2 for you and Tet McMillan is like often starting in most people's flexes and should get better over the course of the year for the same reason I mentioned about Tyler Warren, I don't think I'm doing this because Devon Achane is like a top 10 running back. And even though he's well behind Jonathan Taylor at number 1, 2, or 3, depending on what week it is, this is not of a, I can't see this being enough of a gap in that one spot to drop off these other two players.
Yo gang, this seems like an overpriced trade. This, I mean, 6 BIC 4R TikTok. I don't know. Like this just seems like that is crazy. If that's what the other manager's asking for Jonathan Taylor, if that was the offer, it's like, bro, what are you thinking? Nah, I'm gonna keep Achane. I'm gonna cook with AJ Brown. Ride it off to the sunset. And T-Mac, we'll see if T-Mac can find the end zone more often than not. We got one more. It involves A.J. Brown again, surprisingly. Everybody's trying to get A.J. Brown off the roster, man. So,
yeah,
trade A.J. Brown and Brian Thomas Jr. for Ladd McConkey and Deebo Samuel.
Oh, boy. Oh, this is a tough one. So, here's something I'll say about the Eagles, and I was going to say it about in the Saquon Barkley question at the very top. I did not fit it in. They're coming off their bye. I could see a world where the Eagles are a different team coming out of their bye than we thought they were before the bye. And it's worth noting they were starting to fix things before the bye.
Yeah.
But I could see them being a much different team down the stretch where things are much more worked out. The offense is as expected instead of this like inconsistent mess that it's been for most of the year. And Saquon is better and AJ Brown is better. Probably don't do this. It's really close. I'd rather have Deebo than Brian Thomas Jr., to be honest, which is crazy. But I'm not going to feel great about starting Deebo almost ever. In fact, he's another one of the guys in my Fades and Busts article this week for Yahoo. So I hate him this week, but I hate Brian Thomas Jr. equally. So this is kind of, to me, this is almost more like, do you want AJ Brown or do you want Ladd McConkey?
That's really what you could do. I can literally turn a blind eye to the other players. It's Ladd and AJ straight up. I might entertain it because I do like the Ladd, you know, upbringing progress that he's made in fantasy streets. I do think that AJ Brown, I could see the frustration in some folks. You haven't had those fantasy highs in beginning season, plus a bye week. Like a lot of folks that are coming off of buys are in trade conversations. Like people have tons and tons of trades coming after them when they have a player in buy because they feel like that is like, I can save your roster because you're missing one of your top guys. Just give me him and I'll give you another. You know, and I do feel like, you know, at the end of the day, this could be a Ladd and AJ Brown question, and I kind of would do it. I'm cool getting Ladd in return if I'm on the other side of this.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, first of all, the Chargers haven't had their bye yet. So remember, in the whole bye conversation, which is a good thing to point out, particularly with trades, it's a good time to make moves around those guys because of the perceived value.
Mm-hmm.
He still has to hit his bye, which comes in week 12. But to me, and I've been thinking about this a little bit more with a few more extra seconds and minutes to consider, this is basically a boom-bust trade for a nice floor trade.
Yeah.
Because AJ Brown and Brian Thomas Jr. Are both boom bust versions of these other guys, basically. Where Ladd McConkey, you're gonna get around probably 10 to 12 fantasy points very, very frequently. You're not gonna get 25 super often, but you're also not gonna get 5 almost ever. AJ Brown is not that. You're gonna get 5 maybe more often than you like, but then you're going to get 25 to 30 every now and then. Over the course of the whole season, I would guess they end up scoring very similar numbers of points, but it's going to appear in different ways. And then Brian Thomas Jr. and Debo are kind of the same thing in more of a bench way, where I would rather be rolling Debo Samuel out into my lineup every week. If I have to roll one of them out every week, I'd rather do Debo Samuel, because he's probably going to lead the team in targets with Terry McLaurin never able to get healthy this year. He's probably going to have 6 to 9 touches a game and score like, I don't know, 8 to 10 fantasy points a game. And it's going to be not that great, but it's going to happen. Brian Thomas Jr., I hate him. I don't think he's going to do anything.
You're hating the wrong guy, man. You know who to hate. You know who I hate.
True. If he gets healthy, even, which is not guaranteed, I just never am going to be able to trust him to put up decent, consistent fantasy points. But he holds this tiny little seed of upside where if Trevor Mid-Lawrence figures things out, if Brian Thomas Jr. gets healthy, and if Brian Thomas Jr. remembers how to catch the football, all of a sudden he's the wide receiver one that he was supposed to be, whereas Debo Samuel could never be that. So in my opinion, you are trading massive ceiling with very minimal floor on both players for a nice, even keel, 10 fantasy points a game kinds of guys. I think it's a roster decision and a stylistic decision for whoever's making this trade decision.
All right. So yo 374717 on TikTok, we just helped you out with a trade question, and I hope you guys are liking and subscribing to the channel. We are growing slowly but surely, but please make sure you guys are smashing that share button too. Let all your league mates see it and all point at your question that you asked that probably was silly with that four man trade for one player. Like, that one I still cannot get my eyes off. Like, why would we do that, gang? Yo, gang. But we're gonna end the show Hello, kids. I'm going to end the show on a good note, man. Please make sure you guys are liking, subscribing, heading to the FTN Fantasy website as well. And please check out Matt Okada's 10 things to know for week 10. These are the must to need to know things to help you get the edge on all your league mates. And please make sure you guys are following us on all social media platforms. Okada, any final thoughts?
Good luck. We are past the halfway point. We are nearing the trade deadline, like the Quan said. So this is like crunch time. You think the fantasy playoffs are crunch time? Kind of, but a lot of teams are out before then, and this is the last like stretch to make big moves. So if you've got to make those moves to set yourself up for the playoff run, do it now.
There's a next couple of weeks. Keep your eyes on that one league mate that gave up in week 6, because there's a lot of collusion that goes on these next couple of weeks. So please keep your eyes on all your league mates. Have fun. Let's get this W this week, folks. This is the FTN Fantasy Show. Peace.